We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show. I'm Blair Andrews on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair. My co-host, as always, is Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. Hassan, how's it going?
Same old. The weather's getting a little bit cooler, which I like a lot. It's really football season with a S, Z, and an N. So we're ready to go, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Another week of football and a lot of stuff to discuss. We have no guest tonight, so we'll hopefully make it a quick show, get out of here in time to still catch the end of this this Dallas-Philadelphia game. But yeah, let's kick it off with the first news item. Marvin Jones corralled 10 of 13 targets for 94 yards and 4 touchdowns in Detroit's Week 7 loss to the Vikings. Jones's big day came at the expense of Kenny Golladay, who was held to only 21 yards. Danny Amendola also showed signs of life, catching 8 of 11 targets for 105 yards. So what are your expectations for this offense going forward?
It's you and I are kind of invested a little bit in Kenny Golladay and like the dynasty team that we go on, as well as in a handful of other spots. So it's a bit of a bummer seeing him simply not do what we thought he would have done. But seeing Marvin Jones shred, the Vikes like it was that one Thanksgiving Day game where he did was kind of fun. I started Marvin Jones in a couple of spots where I own him and I have him on the bench, and a couple of other ones where my wide receiver cores are pretty strong. But as far as where I think this is going to go, it's hard to tell, right? Like Golladay up till now, like although Marvin Jones was kind of up there with him in target share, like Golladay was by far the more efficient receivers. You know, he just made the most of his like opportunity. That said, it was actually kind of fun that the Vikes and the Lions, two teams who, you know, we're come to expect to be these run heavy slug offenses, combined for about, what, 70 points, if my math is correct, which it probably isn't. But they combined for 72 points. Quick math. So that was actually kind of fun. What's really going to be important to track is Kerryon Johnson's injury, because if it's worse than it was, I mean, Kerryon Johnson hasn't been doing much this season. He's kind of been touchdown reliant, as we all are kind of in a sense. But if the team is going to be turning over to J.D. McKissic and Ty Johnson, it could just mean a lot more work through the air, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to be, losing games by 12 points, then I think they're going to have to be throwing a lot more. And it looks like, they get the Giants next week, so maybe they can pull out a win there. But they don't have the easiest schedule coming up, I don't think. You mentioned you started Marvin Jones in a couple leagues. I'm curious what led you to that decision. Why did you think Marvin Jones would be worth starting? Because, like, that is not a play I saw coming.
I just don't have anybody else. One of them is a 16-team league that we're in. And, I mean, I started Jerron Brown in this league, so it just tells you where we're at. The other one is actually kind of interesting because it was just really facing the bye week crunch. I would have absolutely not started him because on my bench was Odell Beckham. Like, I didn't want to swap in Kiki QT because I was afraid of his workload. Kenny Stills was also kind of iffy for me. And then I wasn't playing Robbie Anderson on the road against New England, right? So it, just by process of elimination, I wound up on Marvin Jones. It's not like he was that much better of a play than everybody else. It's just so much as I don't have him going in any other like league, so I might as well just take advantage of him in this one that I have him. Okay. I just don't own a lot of Marvin Jones, not in best ball, not in anywhere else. So I'm really hoping this swings back to Kenny Golladay very soon.
Yeah, you'd have to expect it would. I mean, I don't know if there's something that, you know, we could pick out about how the Vikings played defense against Golladay. You know, to get Amendola and Marvin Jones both with double-digit targets. I didn't watch this game, so I don't have any special insight there, but I think you would have to expect that Golladay will still be the guy going forward, and I would, you know, I still feel comfortable starting him against New York, of course. You know, if it turns out Kerryon's injury is pretty bad, and I don't know if we've gotten any reports on that yet, but would you consider starting Ty Johnson or maybe McKissick anywhere?
Yeah, man, I don't know, because Ty Johnson should definitely be rostered, absolutely. Like for starters, he just has to be. He's a pretty strong talent, and he did, you know, he got like 10 carries for J.D. McKissick's 5, and he saw 4 targets as well, and he caught 4 of those for 28 yards, right? So I think it'd be like this kind of timeshare that goes on between McKissick and Ty Johnson, but you really have to roster Ty Johnson. He should be like everyone's priority wherever you pick up this week, I think. And that's great because I actually just dropped him in a bunch of other spots, so I've got to go back and pick him up everywhere else. DeAndre Hopkins caught 9 of 12 targets for 106 yards and a touchdown in the Texans' Week 7 loss to the Colts. Blair, like, most of these targets came after Will Fuller exited with the hamstring injury. And, you know, is Fuller's absence a good thing for Hopkins going forward? And does that vault Hopkins back into the top of the rankings for wide receivers? Or, like, is this, you know, going to be a bit of a drain on the offense?
I think probably a little bit of both. Definitely not having Fuller in is not good for the offense. We kind of saw that today. So, yeah, I don't think we can expect Houston to be quite as explosive if Fuller has to miss some time. We've kind of seen his splits, or seen their splits with him on and off the field, seen Watson's splits with him on and off the field. So it's definitely something to be concerned about. But, you know, at the same time, I think we should have expected, or a lot of us probably did, but maybe not me because I own a lot of DeAndre Hopkins this season. We should have expected a healthy Fuller to cut into Hopkins' workload, and that has happened. So, yeah, I think getting Hopkins, you know, 12 targets a game going forward, if Fuller has to miss a few games, then that's definitely going to help Hopkins, but it might not be as efficient as it used to be. And, yeah, probably it definitely hurts Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, I think a little bit of both. Is that about how you're reading this situation?
Kind of a little bit more optimistic, if only because they have Kenny Stills back. Mm-hmm. And hopefully Kenny Stills can somehow reprise that what Will Fuller brought. It's a bit of a bummer for those of us who really wanted one healthy Will Fuller season. But that's never happening. I mean, I'm not going to say that his, like, dynasty value or whatever is, like, cratered, because that's absolute garbage. He is who he is at this point, and his role and his skill set is still more valuable than most of the other guys out there. In my personal opinion, I do think that Kenny Stills becomes pretty interesting. He makes for a pretty interesting ad, speculative elsewhere. I don't know if like Seals is going to be able to one-to-one replicate what Will Fuller brings, but you know, at the very least, they still got some guy who can take the lid off the offense, like you know, a lid lifter. Because right now it's like genuinely kind of frustrating watching a lot of these like underneath targets go to the Darren Fellses and like Duke Johnson and Jordan. Like, just all these guys are just sort of just stop. I mean, really something has to be said here, because like the Houston Texans have dropped a winnable game against the Carolina Panthers and then a winnable game against the Indianapolis Colts. Like at some point that you would assume that like Bill O'Brien got to be taking some heat for this, right? Like,
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's strange. I think, you know, he probably has more, he definitely has more influence in that on this team than a lot of other head coaches would. So, I don't know if that gives him a little bit extra staying power, but
I should expedite his expulsion. I don't know. Zach Pascal of all people torched his offense for 106 yards and two touchdowns. Zach Pascal, who?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like it's just been. I mean, just to go back a little bit to that Kenny Stills point, he got like four of his five targets for 105 yards, right? Like, so at some point, the TDs are going to be there for Stills.
Yeah, I think that's right. Stills will get his touchdowns if Fuller misses time. I think he still probably doesn't give you quite the skill set that Fuller does. I mean, one thing that, you know, we've seen from Fuller this season and in the past is that he's not only really good on these deep routes, although he is excellent on those, but he's also really efficient on the underneath routes as well. Like, he can catch balls that would otherwise go to Darren Fells, like you said, or Jordan Akins or whoever. So I don't know if Stills has that skill set exactly. So I think Fuller gives the offense a lot more optionality, which definitely helps. So yeah, I don't expect Stills to be a one-for-one replacement, and I think that's probably bad for the team overall, but it could still be good for Hopkins.
Following a team you love in 2019 can be time-consuming. Scrolling through every app, visiting every website on a daily basis is impossible. That's why I subscribe to Axios Sports, the best free daily newsletter in the land. Axios Sports is a modern sports page and is delivered directly to your email inbox. When you sign up for free at sports.axios.com, you'll get the best stories from the NBA and NFL to cricket and ping pong and everything in between. Axios Sports also highlights the most important stats and trends, and just, it gives you the ability to just stay informed and connected to your sports. It's super simple to sign up, and the best of all, it is free. Sports.axios.com. Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the friend sharing an amazing link with your friends as well. You know, just join the 100,000 sports fans who got caught up on the day before it even begins. And best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, nothing. This is free curated sports content delivered directly to you. Sign up at sports.axios.com. That is sports.axios.com. Now let's get into No Shit, Shit No.
All right, first item, Austin Ekeler rushed 5 times for 7 yards and had 7 receptions for 118 yards and a touchdown on 8 targets in the Chargers' Week 7 loss to the Titans.
That's going to be a no shit for me. The Titans are lost, man. This team is lost at sea. They have just surrendered so many games to just teams that we just haven't expected. It's been a bit of a shame Melvin Gordon hasn't really been who we hoped he would be, and it's been an even bigger eye-popping experience that Austin Ekeler is now their primary wide receiver, I guess. So good luck. That said, like I don't know. Do you think it's a function of the O-line being poor or what?
Yeah, probably a combination. I mean, yeah, it's tough to tell. I mean, you look at this team, and with the guys they had healthy today, they had a lot of weapons on the field. They had, you know, Mike Williams was out there doing stuff. Hunter Henry is back. Melvin Gordon is playing. So they don't – it's hard to explain why this offense wouldn't be that functional. Rivers was not terrible. He was fine. So, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Hard to explain this level of badness from hard to explain losing to Tennessee.
We're drawing to Anaheim under center.
Yeah.
Kyle Rudolph got 6 of 8 targets for 58 yards and 1 score in Minnesota's Week 7 win over the Lions.
Yeah, this... I think no shit. I don't know. I think shit no. I mean, I don't know. Adam Thielen left this game early, so that opened up some targets for Rudolph, obviously. It sounds like Thielen's going to be okay, so I don't think we'll expect to see this kind of game from Rudolph again. I guess I'm more interested in sort of what we think about Minnesota's offense going forward. Kirk Cousins had 4 touchdowns on 34 attempts. Dalvin Cook had a huge game, obviously. Stephon Diggs went for 142 yards. This is sort of a level of offensive efficiency that we haven't seen from Minnesota before, but also a level of kind of explosiveness we haven't really seen. So, yeah, my question is, are they going to be able to keep this up, or at least try to keep it up, or are they going to go back to just, running the ball, 50 times a game?
They actually ran it a whole bunch of times. The most important part and the important takeaway here is that they really didn't target the running backs, right? Dalvin Cook only had 2 targets, and then CJ Ham had 1 for a touchdown, which was just, oh, God. But something called the rookie BC Johnson had 8 targets. Kyle Rudolph had 6, and he caught 5 for 58, as mentioned, but also Irv Smith had 6, and he caught 5 for 60. So, it could have just easily been him here in this no-shit blurb. And then Diggs had a fairly efficient 8 targets. What's really most frustrating to me is the fact that BC Johnson and Stephon Diggs are the same number of targets. Like, you would assume they would just give Diggs more work, but apparently no.
Yeah, strange. I guess, like, you want, if you're the Vikings, you want Kirk Cousins to be able to spread the ball around and make the defense be a little bit honest. Which you'd think, as a fantasy owner, Thielen goes down, that means big game for Diggs, but I don't necessarily think that's what Minnesota wants to do, which is kind of disappointing.
Yeah, and I think this is like the vaunted, like, quote-unquote balanced offense that people like keep talking about, and I mean, if it works, it works, man. I mean, at the very least, I'd like to see them to try to get Diggs 8 targets a game and not like 3.
Right.
Like, yeah, he was getting. Right.
Exactly. We'll take what we can get. Robert Woods caught 5 of 7 targets for 80 yards in the Rams' Week 7 win over the Falcons.
This is going to be a shit no from me, actually. This is just a function of playing the Falcons, and even then, this wasn't like the same kind of like explosions that we've come to experience from like a Falcons game. They're going to have another solid spot next week for the Rams. I am pulling up the strength of schedule app for the rest of the season here. And according to our handy dandy little heat map, the Rams go Atlanta, then Cincy, then the bye. And then they just face like a slew of, it's like a murderer's row. They've got one of the worst strength of schedules following their bye weeks. You got Pittsburgh, you got Chicago, you have Baltimore. And things ease up a little bit with Arizona in week 13. But then you get Seattle, Dallas, and then San Fran in week 16, which is aka the fantasy playoff final. So good luck, guys. It's going to be rough sledding, and this is not the same team that we've come to see under McVay in years past. And I wonder if a lot of that just has to do with how top heavy they kind of are in terms of payroll structure.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe in any case, this is a good time to sell your Rams wide receivers before they're bye.
Yeah, I mean, plug them in definitely for Cincinnati, but it gets pretty tricky according to our central schedule going forward, as well as like the stat explorer. So D.D. Westbrook contributed 6 catches for 103 yards and 9 targets, along with 14 yards and 2 carries Sunday in Jacksonville's Week 7 win over Cincy.
Well, this is a no shit. I mean, Westbrook has showed flashes like this before. We know he's pretty good pretty explosive. So I think, I don't know if we want to expect this kind of game going forward. DJ Chark kind of had a down game for what he's been doing this season so far. Although he still had 53 yards, which is kind of like, it's, you'll take it, I guess. But so yeah, I think we'll probably see these two kind of, you know, switching off. I don't think we should expect this offense to start to support two top 24 wide receivers, but Westbrook is going to have his days. You know, one thing, speaking of the fantasy streaming app, Jacksonville has, I think, maybe the fourth easiest schedule for wide receivers going forward, so I like buying into this wide receiver core, and Westbrook probably is the cheapest way still, even after this game, I would expect. So, yeah. Julio Jones caught 6 of 9 targets for 93 yards in the Falcons' Week 7 loss to the Rams.
This is no shit. He's just so good, so good. I mean, my biggest concern here is, like, the Matt Ryan ankle injury. Like, how bad is that going to be for him? And how much time is he going to miss?
Yeah, I have nothing to say.
Yeah, that's the bigger fear, right? Like, if they're going to go to Matt Schaub under center, then, you know, who knows what that's going to be. Like, that could just not really work out the way that we want it to.
Yeah, have we seen Julio play with another quarterback besides Matt Ryan? I don't know that off the top of my head, and not fast enough with the game splits app to tell.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can pull that up right now, but of course, in the one time that I needed to do anything, my internet is not really doing much.
It's a race,
yeah.
No, well, yeah, I don't think so. I think he's played every game so far. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that makes a big difference. I mean, earlier in his career, Matt Ryan was not as good as he has been the last few years, and Julio still smashed. I mean, it's probably, a little bit of Julio makes Matt Ryan as good as he is and not so much vice versa. So, yeah, I think it'll definitely be something to pay attention to. And would you consider benching Julio if Ryan can't play?
No, I just don't think you can bench him. That's just one of the things. Like, who, like Schaub is gonna have, like, it's gonna be a net downgrade for everyone. But unfortunately, they're just you can't bench him. Eric Ebron got 4 of 5 targets for 70 yards and a touchdown in the Colts' Week 7 win over the Texans.
I think I'm going to say shit no on this one. And, you know, I say that as someone who probably owns Ebron in too many leagues this season. Well, yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, this isn't like an outrageous game from a target perspective. 5 targets is about, you know, at the high end of what he's been getting this season. So I think it's reasonable to expect that kind of output, I mean, or that kind of opportunity. But this is the first game he's had with more than 3 catches. First game he's had with more than 48 yards. So I think the Ebron that we, you know, played with Andrew Luck last year and that people were drafting in like the top 100 picks, I don't think that we're getting that Ebron back, even after this game. Daniel Jones completed 22 of 35 passes for 223 yards, 1 touchdown and 1 interception in the Giants' 27-21 Week 7 loss to the Cardinals.
Yeah, this is, unfortunately, it's a bit of a no-shit for me. This is, like, sure, the Cardinals got Patrick Peterson back, but, like, Golden Tate was, like, quoted after the game saying they made, like, the Cardinals look like the 85 Bears. And, like, that's just bad. Like, I mean, I didn't watch the game, but, like, according to people, it just looked like he dinked and dunked his way down the field a handful of times. And, you know, I mean, he just probably isn't just the guy who we thought he could have been after that initial Danny Dimes burst. I mean, he got completely wrecked last week against the Patriots. Like, he threw 3 ints. And the guy has, sure, he's been facing fairly difficult, it's a fairly rough schedule, I think. But You know, I mean, at the same time, like, he hasn't, like, the only defense he really sort of made big, I believe, was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have now just surrendered these massive games to everybody. So that was their first inkling that this Buccaneers secondary wasn't all that great. So it'll be interesting to see how Daniel Jones sort of bounces back going forward. It's actually kind of a little bit frustrating that he's not even rushing, right? Because you could get that with their fantasy. He at least would be good for fantasy, but it's early to say he's bad, but you know, definitely concerning.
Yeah, it's tough to tell. I mean, small sample, obviously, but you know, rookie quarterback, I think based on a lot of, well, kind of his expectations coming in to the season, you might still be a little bit pleasantly surprised with kind of how competent he's looked. I mean, considering the weapons he's been playing with the last few games before today, and you know, the defenses he's been facing apart from that Tampa Bay game. I don't know. You would have expected a bigger game today against Arizona with Saquon and Evan Engram back, but so yeah, I don't know. I think his rookie season probably hasn't quite been disastrous yet. Like, he'll probably get another get a chance to take a step forward next year. Not like some rookie quarterbacks we've seen recently who play bad and then just disappear. So I think there's still a little bit of room for optimism with Jones, but yeah, like you said, not looking good so far.
Naheem Hines rushed one time for 3 yards in the Colts' Week 7 win over the Texans. He also added one reception for 13 yards.
I guess this is no shit. This is kind of what Hines has been doing this whole season. Just, well, not what he's been doing, but just the way they've been using him, or rather not using him. I asked before we started recording if you had any thoughts on what you were doing with Hines in Dynasty, given this kind of usage we've seen this year.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is a sell low, probably. I mean, he's probably worth something, like probably a third or whatever. But like, he is just pretty much like the worst case scenario, I think, for like Hines. And as a guy who owned a lot of Hines last year and, you know, bought in a little bit again this year, like, he's just, I mean, like, there's nothing there. The guy's play doesn't match what he is. He's like running behind Jordan Wilkins now. He had like two targets today. He caught one of those. Marlon Mack had three and he caught all three, and like neither of them were particularly productive. And then Jordan Wilkins had one target, and you know, with like the Indianapolis passing game funneling its way through this like tight end by committee, and then to T.Y. Hilton and apparently Zach Pascal now. Like, I don't know what value, if any, Hines brings. Like, he doesn't, he's clearly not like a James White-esque character in this offense at all.
Yeah, and you think that is like deeper than just playing one season with Andrew Luck and then getting Brissett as his quarterback now? Like, there's something about Hines himself.
No, I think last year a lot of it was just like opportunity driven. Like, Hilton was out and like they had Ebron only, they didn't have Mac for a little while, so they just had to funnel a lot of that usage towards Hines. They just didn't have like particularly good a particularly solid supporting cast, right? Like some of his like biggest games came in like one of his biggest games, and he's not even like he's like an explosive playmaker. Like, it's just like he got a lot of like cheap PPR points, and so it's like, you know, like he's catching like last year he has like a line against Jacksonville, which is nine targets, nine catches, 50 yards. Like, that's a really solid PPR day, like for an RB2. But like, none of these are like just these explosive scores. It's not like a Tariq Cohen whose like speed actually pops off, right? Like, where you've got actual production going on for him. Because like the second like the rest of the backfield got healthy, like it was just back to the back of the line for Hines. Like, even this, like the coaching staff clearly does not see him that way. And just remember, like, we're not really seeing Paris Campbell play either. So there's more of a touch squeeze coming for him than people, like, you would think. So you want to get out of it ahead of time. I mean, again, if you hold him because you need the running back production, like, you can try to get him, get something for him, and even if it's not that valuable, like, he's just not going to be valuable after this year anyway, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, we see a lot of times year two is the year for running backs to really have their breakout season. After Hines' rookie year, it really looked like he was on the verge of that kind of breakout. So now that that does not appear to be materializing, I think, it's really, you have to think harder about possibly cutting bait. So yeah, that's sad for a lot of my dynasty teams, but maybe that's where we are now. Chase Edmonds rushed 27 times for 126 yards and 3 touchdowns and added 2 receptions for 24 yards as a receiver in the Cardinals' Week 7 win over the Giants.
Yeah, this one is definitely no shit. I mean, we know Edmonds is good. This is really tilting because I started DJ everywhere in DFS. Like, I have, you know, I was pretty excited. I was just, like, putting him down. Like, here we go. And, you know, it's a bit of a bummer that he didn't get any usage at all. And this was genuinely the last really good matchup that we have for the rest of the season per the strength of schedule streaming app. Arizona has, for this SOS streaming app, they have the second worst run schedule for the rest of the season. Fun fact, Minnesota has the best one. But yeah, so they get New Orleans, and they get San Francisco, then they get Tampa Bay, and then San Francisco again before they go into the bye. So that's about, what, like a month where I mean, if you have DJ, you're probably plugging him in, but at the same time, I don't know if you should be. Like, I think in the league that I own DJ, I'm probably going to be trying to shop him away for probably running backs who are, like, on a bye or something. Like, I don't know if I'm going to really be starting him down here. Like, he needs to get a lot more receiving production, I think, to be particularly useful against the Saints or the Niners or Tampa Bay over the next month. And even then, we should be tempering our expectations. I'm just saying that the Arizona backfield should have come with tempered expectations. But Chase Edmonds is kind of exciting. Today was a big day for best ball, especially my best ball rosters that have him. What are you doing with Chase Edmonds in Dynasty?
Where I own him, I'm holding after this game. And I think I'm probably approaching owners who, yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you've owned Chase Edmonds this whole time, you either are a DJ owner and you've been handcuffing him, or you're pretty high on Edmonds. So you wouldn't want to necessarily give him up after he finally has a huge game. So I doubt there are going to be a lot of people who will see this game and think that they can then sell high on Edmonds, but and if that's the case, I think he's definitely worth trying to buy, because I think this is probably a sign of things to come. I mean, we know Edmonds is good, and he's actually been showing it the whole season. He's been pretty efficient as a runner, so I think this is legit, and I would want to be buying if possible. Hassan, I know, like me, you like to dress up in your Sunday best to record this podcast, but probably, or maybe not, but possibly like me, you also have trouble finding a suit that fits well. But luckily, Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe. They are the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more. Everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. The best part is that they are affordable. Almost all their custom clothing is under $400. The process is simple. You choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or do it all yourself online at Indochino.com. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. Promo code BLUEWIRE for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. An incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely with Blair. Like, you gotta just get their suits. They're genuinely phenomenal. And you know what else you gotta do? Get those suits, put them on, and come join us out in the RotoViz Patreon. You know, you can gain access to the RotoViz Radio Slack. you can ask questions, you can league win advice from many other podcasts and writing team like myself, and I had like Devin McIntyre, John Lipinski, Blair's in there, Matt Jones is in there. Like, we're all like, the stars are all here, guys. Patronships start at just $6 per month. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today. Join an exclusive community of listeners and sign up at patreon.com/RotoVizRadio. And just want to remind you guys that you can get a listeners only 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to our NFL premium content and tools that help support the pod. For a limited time only, we're also offering a 2-year RV Radio NFL sub, which includes a 10% discount and complimentary access to the RotoViz Radio, RotoViz Patreon, and the Slack channel. For the rest of the 2019 season, you get 10% off a 2-year subscription and enjoy unlimited access to the Slack channel through for the rest of the season and hopefully beyond. Don't know yet. You know, all you have to do is head over to rotoviz.com/podcast, sign up via the 2-year RV Radio subscription, and we'll email you Slack access details within 48 hours. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast. And just as a reminder, guys, this site goes 24/7, 365. So we do not stop when the season is over. That's where things are just getting started. We're getting into prospects. We're going to be, you know, and out there in the Slack, we're out here kicking up trades for dynasty teams that are falling out of contention. Come join us, and, you know, we'll see you there.
All right, moving on to news item number 3. Tyler Boyd submitted 5 grabs for 55 yards on 14 targets Sunday in Cincinnati's Week 7 loss to the Jaguars. It's been a rough couple weeks for Boyd, who's caught only 8 of 21 targets with 3 drops. Today's performance was pretty bad, since he also dropped 2 passes and lost a fumble and had only 0 yards in the first half. So, Hassan, do you think Boyd is going to bounce back next week, or are you concerned about this poor play?
I'm not going to lie if, you know, by saying I'm not concerned, it's been poor, man. Like, the Bengals' offense is still putting up points, but it's a hell of a rough way to get them. And, like, all it is just, like, a reduced ceiling for everyone. Like, it's not good. Like, Dalton today threw 3 ints. 2 of them were picked off, and he was targeting Boyd. Now, I don't know if this is, like, because the coaches are being uninventive with how they're calling plays for Boyd. He's just not getting the same kind of usage. I mean, he's getting the same kind of usage. Just him and Dalton haven't been on the same page. Boyd, we know, is very, very good, and hopefully he bounces back. My bigger fear is that they just flip on over to, like, Ryan Finley, and then it's all... it's going to be a bad time for everyone involved going forward. I'm trying to look up what Cincy's... They've got kind of a bit of a run-of-the-mill stretch here. Like, and this is what plays back to that fear about Ryan Finley, because they play the Rams, and then they go on bye, but they've got a pretty solid lead-up before the playoff run. And then... You know, they get Miami and they get Cleveland as well. So it's you want Boyd to be firing on all cylinders. I mean, I'm nervous. Like, I thought that, like, Boyd would be fine. Maybe this is just a two week blip, and I'm just overreacting, because I was really hoping for a lot more from Boyd the last 2 weeks. But at the same time, I guess, you know, people have down games. He's still getting the targets, but really my fear is, like, a guy like Alex Erickson saw 14 targets and he got 8 of those for 137. And, you know, like, earlier we had Auden Tate taking stuff, and, you know, at the start of the season we had John Ross. Like, it's a bit concerning that, like, Boyd could face a dust squeeze if he continues being this poor. What are your thoughts, Blair?
Yeah, I would be concerned about that. Probably more concerned if he didn't also have 14 targets today. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone really expected the Bengals to be, like, a good team to win a lot of games necessarily. But yeah, it's hard to figure out what to make exactly of Boyd's poor play in particular. I mean, this is, I guess, what, the second or third game in a row that he's kind of underperformed? Okay, no, second game, but he had another bad one in week 4. Where he really underperformed his opportunity. But, I mean, he's had double-digit targets in all but 2 games this season, and I think as long as you know, the other guys that Dalton is throwing passes to are Alex Erickson and Auden Tate. That probably is going to continue. So he, you know, might be able to salvage his season just based on volume. I guess the question is he good enough to transcend not only sort of poor offensive efficiency all around, but poor QB play if they do decide to go away from Dalton, although even if they don't, Dalton has not been that great, so I think the QB play is going to be poor no matter what. Yeah, that's tough. I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's just sort of stuff to think about, like, as we head into the, you know, as Cincinnati heads into their bye. I'm sure we're not the only ones thinking about it, and, you know, we're about halfway through the season now, so, you know, year-to-date production pretty much is the best predictor of what next, you know, what going for the rest of the season production looks like. And I mean, Boyd's been pretty good, but it's a little bit concerning that we're going to be getting these highs and lows.
Would you be trying to move him if you are a Boyd owner?
I would actually still need a lot. I mean, like, where would you still rank Boyd in your dynasty rankings?
Dynasty rankings. I mean, I'd still probably have him,
I would say, fairly high, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, going into the season, I actually had him in my top 12 wide receivers. So
I remember, yeah.
A lot higher than I think a lot of other people would have him. And I might still have him there. I'd have to see who else would end up being around there. But I don't think I'd move him much farther down than, like, wide receiver 18.
Yeah, so let me... Let's see if I can actually pull up a handful of guys here so then we can I do want to get your thoughts, because we are, like I said, we're coming to the
right.
I'm pulling up your ranks right now,
which have not been updated recently.
No, but that's get on that. Well, that's totally fine. I mean,
some of the other writers have updated their rankings, so you can, like, compare.
I remember Curtis Patrick mentioned that he was updating his, so actually let's use his.
Yeah.
Yep, because he's got Michael Thomas as his wide receiver 1 overall, which is a very good take to have. All right, so he's got Tyler Boyd pretty high, though. Like, he's got him, like, where you'd think. I mean, so he's got Boyd as – he's got him as wide receiver 18. He's got him after Brandon Cooks and Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley, Tyler Lockett, DJ Moore, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin,
yeah,
Julio, Cooper Kupp, Amari, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams. But guys who he's got around Boyd would be like N'Keal Harry, Robert Woods, T.Y. Hilton, Kenny Golladay. I think Kenny Golladay should probably be bumped up a little bit. Adam Thielen should be bumped up a little bit, because he's got him ahead of Christian Kirk, for example. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you have Boyd ahead of Courtland Sutton?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... When you're going through, like, the actual ranks and you're seeing them, would you have Boyd ahead of Cooks? Brandon Cooks?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I had Boyd ahead of Cooks going into the season, and both Boyd and Cooks have been... Well, Cooks has been disappointing, too, and Boyd has had actually some big games, so I think I'd still have Boyd ahead of Cooks. Yeah.
Yeah, you had Boyd ahead of Keenan and Julio and Kirk.
Right.
And Fulk, well, I guess at this point you had Godwin. I mean, just because it's a little bit older, right? So, like, here's some guys who I was curious.
Yeah, I would definitely move Godwin up.
Kupp?
Yeah.
Tyreek?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Kenny Golladay?
Probably.
Yeah, so Golladay is interesting, right? Because, like, he's the one whose dynasty value seems to never be in alignment with his actual, like, production.
Right.
Because I was fairly aggressive on him in, like, our ranks. I'm trying to go through the rest of yours, but I think most of your, like, I guess Calvin Ridley versus Boyd would be a decision point to have.
Yeah, it would. I was expecting a lot more from Ridley than we've seen so far this season, so I don't know. I still really like him, and I don't think I'd want to move Ridley down that much. But, he certainly has not been getting the usage I expected this season. So,
but this is, I mean, but again, this sort of speaks to the kind of premier asset that, like, Boyd is, and he was a guy that who you could legitimately have gotten off waivers.
Right. Yep.
So I mean I'm kind of with you. Like I've been a pretty big Boyd truther for a while. It's just it's good to see him getting opportunity. I'm not too concerned. Like all receivers are kind of volatile anyway.
While we're doing this exercise and I'm just looking at it, this is like totally off topic, but Godwin is the guy who probably I need to make the biggest move on, moving him up. And I'm looking at how far I can put him up there. Would you have Godwin ahead of Cooper?
Ahead of Amari Cooper?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. What about ahead of Mike Evans?
Yes.
What about Diggs?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
At this point, I would probably have to go with yes.
Godwin ahead of Diggs?
I don't know, right? Because like when you go from like a tier perspective, I would have Amari Cooper as half a tier ahead. I would probably have like Godwin, Evans, Diggs, all those guys, and like Keenan, who like in a one big tier. Like when if you're drafting, Galladay should be in that tier as well. Boyd maybe. Lockett should be up there.
What about Godwin versus Devontae Adams?
Yeah, I think Adams should be kind of in that tier.
Yeah,
for sure. And this is it's gonna come off like a crazy hot take. And I know that I'm like complete like again, the big thing that like Adams is facing, the big headwind he's facing is like the improved defense. Like he just sort of curbs pass volume.
Yeah.
I think Adams is completely ready to smash, but also I'm very very confident in stating that like the Green Bay Packers are probably going to be looking to bring in an alpha, not necessarily an alpha, but are going to be looking to spend a lot of early draft capital on a wide receiver this season, because like the you know what laid this aerial offense bare was the fact that like Aaron Rodgers is throwing to a bunch of like just later round guys who the NFL passed on multiple times, and you're sort of seeing why.
I
mean like Adams was the last guy they spent any significant draft capital on, and that's going to be about 5 years ago as we head into the 2020 draft. So that should tell you where we're at with their needed wide receiver.
Right. Well, I mean, if some of these guys who look a little bit promising can actually make some big steps. I mean, MVS looked good today, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, MVS was like they all looked good, but I mean, at the same time, like Rodgers was the first guy to really D off on this Oakland defense secondary, and he was just like, I mean, Jimmy Graham went off today, dude. like that's just all. Like that's all you need to know is like you got a four target, 64, four catches, 65 yards, one touchdown, second, you know, leading he was second on the team in like targets, and like you saw just like second on the team in receiving production. Like Geronimo Allison, who saw five targets, did nothing. Jamal Williams saw five targets and did pretty well. I mean, like, again, Danny Vitale put up 43 yards, the fullback. So it's just like, you know, I mean, this is what they're doing, and it's a perfect lead-in for the next question, which is Aaron Rodgers completed 25 of 31 passes for 429 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 0 ints. In the Packers, it's 42-24 Week 7 win over the Raiders. He also added 2 rushes for 6 yards and an additional score. This all comes despite missing Adams for their third straight game. He put on a vintage performance. He ethered the Raiders for the fourth most passing yards of his career. You know, what are your expectations for the aerial attack for the rest of the season, and especially as the guy who we're talking about in general, like Devontae Adams?
Yeah, I think I'm in on the Packers aerial attack going forward. I think a lot of these guys, like MVS, like Lazard, are actually like legitimately talented. So I'm excited to see what they can do going forward, even if Adams is not going to be able to play a lot. Green Bay hasn't had their bye week yet, and they have kind of a middle of the road schedule going forward, so it's not maybe not ideal for them. But on the other hand, they've played one of the harder schedules in the NFL so far for wide receivers, and have looked good, obviously. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, obviously once Devontae Adams gets back, he's gonna probably be the guy, but I think it would be a mistake to totally write off what these guys have done in his absence, what MVS and Lazard have done. So I think they'll still be able to carve out some roles going forward. So yeah, in the past I haven't been like the biggest fan of Adams or even of a lot of what Green Bay has done in terms of their receiving core, obviously. But yeah, I'm optimistic. I know you're not an Adams truther by any means either, or any of these guys, except is Jamon Moore's not on the Packers.
No, he's gone. Like when I saw him in like the first preseason and he was just running behind everyone, I was like, yeah, he's dead. I didn't have any real reason to be a truther for this like mediocre product.
Right.
Like, but he was drafted the earliest, but yeah, he also got flushed out the first. So
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not this like massive Davante Adams guy, because I mean, like, there are people out there who will fight you unless you say like Davante Adams is the greatest like wide receiver ever. Like he is Megatron 2.0. and I'm just not there. Like I think it was fine where people were drafting Davante Adams. I wouldn't have drafted him that high. That's just not just where I want to be, you know, allocating my risk. I can see the reason for why people are aggressive on him, you know, being Rodgers' only wideout. But at the same time, outside of the one Philly game, like, Rodgers really didn't need to throw all that much to him in order for them to win, and that's where it gets kind of tricky-ish, right? And he is a very good wide receiver, don't get me wrong. He should be up there. But I think really more so the discourse around Davante Adams is there's no way you could be contra that just yet, you know what I mean? Although, you know, given, you know, I'm looking over at like the player win rate app here over on RotoViz that Mike Beer has created, which again, if you play any best ball at all, you should be perusing as it pertains to just, you know, it actually tracks fairly well with just PPR leagues, especially if you're interested in like highly drafted guys like an Adams. And he has currently got you're going to have to tell me if this is good or not, but he has a 3.8% win rate. Mm. So
he
is
must
that
be on a lot of my teams.
it's partially just not his fault. Like, he's been hurt. He has 63 like PPR points, and he's been in like the low single digits like this whole time because like again like he's just so volatile picking him. Given his like poor usage then his injury, but he's set to smash here going forward. But even then, like, I don't know how much he's going to really be a factor. I mean, they've got a middle of the road schedule. They got KC, then LSE, then Carolina, then they go into bye, then they, you know, get San Fran, who I mentioned are for real, and then they get New York Giants and Washington, who are two, you know, mediocre playoff, two mediocre teams that they can tee off on in like the start of the fantasy playoffs, and they close with Chicago and Minnesota. So I think Adams is set for an absolute smash. But I mean, do you think Green Bay invests early capital in a wide receiver next offseason, or
I would be surprised if they did. I think we all kind of expected them to possibly draft a wide receiver this season.
Yeah.
And they didn't, obviously. But I think probably what... Yeah, I think the guys that they have on their team now have done enough to keep them from spending, you know, a day one or day two pick on a wide receiver. So I'd be surprised if they did, honestly. I mean, am I way too high on, like, MVS in particular? And maybe on Lazard, too?
I think so. Lazard didn't really do all that much today, as much as we would have liked to. Like, I mean, these are all just, like...
Yeah, I mean, no, today just... he didn't do much. And even if you look back at his... I mean, if you're just looking at, like, his box scores, you know, there's nothing really that stands out. But he's someone who, I guess, he was interesting as a prospect... freak score monster, and kind of has never really panned out. So, you know, now that he's kind of getting his chance and actually looking halfway decent, like, you know, maybe going overboard, but still, I think they have some young guys here who are pretty promising, and I think they probably like what they have, or at least it seems that way with how they're using them, so yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's only so much you can do without, like, a second good complementary piece. Like, these guys are just not, like, seeing the kind of, like, 8-9 targets you expect, like a good wide receiver to actually truly command. Like, even MVS, like, had to, like, he got 3 targets, but he converted that into a lot that, like, speaks to his, like, that he's probably just better off as a role player than he is, like, as a, you know, core piece of this offense. I was going to ask, what are your thoughts with, who am I thinking of? Oh yeah, Geronimo Allison. He should just not be in the NFL.
Yeah, I've never really been a Geronimo Allison fan, so it's hard for me to get on board at this point when he's, you know, being targeted more than these other guys on the Packers and doing less with his targets. So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it's fair what you said about these guys not exactly being, like, a true number 2 option or a really elite weapon. And it's possible that they would be looking for somebody more like that. I mean, the other thing to consider, kind of as you said before, is that Adams has now, I think this is, what, his 5th year in the league? So, you know, maybe it's still a long ways off, but I'm sure Green Bay is thinking about, you know, what comes after Adams and probably looking to draft his successor pretty soon. So there is that. So yeah, I mean, it would be really interesting if they did pick an early wide receiver, and I think it wouldn't necessarily be a bad strategy for them. I just kind of would be surprised if they did.
Yeah, well, and if they do, we will definitely be discussing it, because it's gonna hold. It's gonna hold. Definitely, who I have dynasty ramifications. I mean, this was why people vaulted N'Keal Harry pretty up there.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of N'Keal Harry, he's gonna be eligible to return in a few weeks. What are you doing with him?
I mentioned this a little bit ago, but I can't remember what episode it was. But I kind of want him in redraft. Like Josh Gordon's not gonna play. You know, Dorsett, all the other guys. I know that they all have his like trust. Jacoby Myers is also a thing who apparently has like his trust. But man, if N'Keal Harry is like particularly good and like he flashes, like he could be like that DJ Moore presence down the stretch last season, and you're not finding guys on a Tom Brady led offense on the waiver wire all that often. And if he is, you got to go. You like run, sprint. He's a fine stash this late in the season. Like we're really at the dregs. Like now, like you would have been better off blowing your FOB much earlier and then just trying to grab these guys for $1 each. But you know, this is where we're at. Where we're at now.
So you would be picking him up at this point now and stashing him for a few weeks before he can actually play.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like he's a higher upside. Like I dropped MVS like in one of my other leagues last week to get I can't even remember who. Like I think it was probably a tight end. But like I have no regrets.
Well,
like
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, like, MVS was, like, my wide receiver 7. I really didn't need him anymore. Like, I just needed I needed a tight end.
Right. Well, yeah, that's probably a pretty strong tight end. I mean, wide receiver core if MVS is droppable. But, I guess the thing is, I don't have a lot of teams that Harry probably helps that much because of the way I've drafted all my teams. Like, I'm having enough trouble, figuring out when to start Will Fuller and Galladay and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Harry is definitely interesting. I think I'd be worried about him not having played the whole season and then him actually coming in and being effective. But I think if you need wide receiver help on your fantasy team, then he definitely is a high upside option. Probably maybe worth stashing even this early. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.